16. Ultimate Sonship. Mortified at what I have done to this one who has given so much, who has given me life itself, denying him when he needed me most, following from a distance, pretending not even to know him, I approach the gruesome scene. The crowd is scattering in all directions. The hired gunman has disappeared. Within minutes, most of the terrified spectators are gone. Neither Dr. Caiaphas nor any of the other leaders of the protest movement are to be seen anywhere. Judd, too, has disappeared. It is about noon. On the ground where he lays dying, Jess is in obvious agony. I faintly hear him whisper, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they have done." Sensing my approach, he looks up with heavy eyelids and smiles. The love in his eyes says all, and I know he forgives me. I stoop down beside him. "Do you see what all this means?" he says softly. All I can do is shake my head, weeping freely. "To live out my obedient sonship," he says, "and to give you the example of obedience, that you too might live." "But you are dying," I cry. My heart is breaking. "Why would the Father want you to die?" "For your sake," he answers. "My sake? How can that be? I denied you. I do not deserve your love, still less your forgiveness." I break down, sobbing in anguish. "Of course you do not deserve it," he says softly. "But I love you just the same, and my Father loves you and forgives you too. Do not forget, he sent me to you because of his great love." "But it seems senseless," I wail, "for you to die like this." "To you at this moment, perhaps, but out of my death will come the power to defeat death altogether and bring eternal life to all the world." "But how can such a thing be?" "It is the Father's way," smiles Jess. "Remember what I taught you? His kingdom is upside down from the world's. Things work differently in his economy. Trust our Father to accomplish his victory of salvation and reconciliation." He smiles up at me, then struggles to lift his hand. He takes mine in his for a moment. I can feel the strength ebbing out of this body that was once so strong. "Ah, little one," he says, "in dying to self, in the self-willing abandonment into the Father's will, is life. I am only dying to my flesh, but out of such death will eternal life be born." He finds my eyes and again probes deeply, as he has on two important occasions before. "Are you willing to die with me?" he asks. I stare into his eyes, but before I answer, a few more of his followers slowly come forward. Pete stoops down at my side, Andy next to him, then Jim, John, Bart, Phil, Tom, and the others. I am no longer afraid for what will happen to me. Doesn't seem to matter now. We are all weeping. Jess looks around and speaks a few personal words to each one in turn. Behind us, another figure approaches. We rise to give her room. It is his mother. Mary kneels beside him. She takes his hand as they exchange a few words. We wait patiently for perhaps 3 or 4 minutes, not hearing what they say. At last, she bends forward, kisses his cheek, then leans back, tears flowing freely down her face. As we cluster around him, Jess lays on the ground. Occasionally he speaks, but his body is weakening. He seems at peace. The women weep. An hour goes by, then two. Passers-by approach from time to time and jeer. Few taunt and make fun of him, but generally a quietness hovers over the place, a mood of waiting for the inevitable. Even the officials and police officers who have been sent to keep order seem moved by the solemnity of the occasion. About 2:30, he seems struggling to speak.
I am thirsty, he says.
Two drifters are walking by drinking. Both look like criminals. "Here, you so-called king," says one of them. He walks over and pours some of the cheap wine from the bottle he is holding over Jess's face, then laughs crudely. "Why don't you save yourself if you're a king?" he yells down mockingly. "What right have you to taunt him?" says the other as they begin to walk away. "Do you have no respect? If you and I got shot, it would be no more than we deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." He pauses, then glances back. "Remember me," he says down to Jess. Jess struggles to reassure him with a faint smile and nod. Gradually, clouds move overhead. The sky darkens. Suddenly, about 3 o'clock, Jess cries out loudly in anguish.
"Oh, Father," bursts from his lips. I commend my spirit. "Father, it is finished."
I look down. His eyes are closed. I know he is gone. The next instant, the sky erupts with a brilliant flash of light, followed by a crash of thunder. A few officials come forward, confer briefly with his mother, then pick up the body and carry it to a funeral home. From Jesus, an Obedient Son, by Michael Phillips. Read by Michael Kimball. More information on this and similar writings may be found at fatheroftheinklings.com. Visit Amazon to purchase Jesus, an Obedient Son, and other books by Michael Phillips.